ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 16
एंटाइटल्ड किंग चित्रकेतु मीट्स द लॉर्ड
वर्स टेक्स्ट 32 श्लोक पदाब्ज विस्तरम प्रेमाश्रुदेश उपमेहयन्मुहु प्रेमोपरुद्धाखिलवर्ण निर्गमो नैवाशकत्तं प्रसमेदितुं चिरम् उत्तमश्लोक पदाब्ज विस्तरम। ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन विद टीयर्स ऑफ लव एंड अफेक्शन चित्रकेतु रिपीटेडली मॉइस्टेंड द रेस्टिंग प्लेस ऑफ द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड्स लोटस फीट बिकॉज हिज वॉइस वॉज चोक्ड इन एक्सटेसी। फॉर अ कंसिडरेबल टाइम ही वॉज अनएबल टू अटर एनी ऑफ द लेटर्स ऑफ द अल्फाबेट टू ऑफर द लॉर्ड सूटेबल प्रेयर्स। Purport. All the letters of the alphabet and the words constructed by those letters are meant for offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maharaj Chitraketu had the opportunity to offer prayers to the Lord by composing nice verses from the letters of the alphabet, but because of his ecstasy, for a considerable time he could not join those letters to offer prayers to the Lord. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.22, Idam hi pumhas tapasahar shrutasya va svitasya shuktasya cha buddhi dattaya avichyuto artha kavibhir nirupto yad uttama shloka gunanu varnanam. If one has scientific, philosophical, political, economic or any other abilities and wants perfection in his knowledge, he should offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by composing first-class poetry or engaging his talents in the service of the Lord. Chitraketu wanted to do this, but he was unable because of loving ecstasy. Therefore, he had to wait for a considerable time before he could offer prayers. So we are at this stage of the story of King Chitraketu here, where he has just had the darshan of the Lord, and we are now seeing the symptoms of a pure devotee manifesting. When he is so choked up, he is unable to speak, and in the subsequent verses we will see that he offers very beautiful prayers which we can understand the mood of a pure, through which we can understand the mood of a pure devotee. So Prabhupada here is giving us, even the purport, he is giving us the directions of what an aspiring devotee can try to learn from the lives and actions of a pure devotee. Also he makes the point repeatedly of how Bhakti Yoga is the highest, because this is the symptoms of devotional service. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that whatever one can offer, whatever abilities one has, anything that we can do, everything comes from Krishna, and recognizing that and offering it back to Krishna is really devotional service. So the only difference between an aspiring devotee and a pure devotee is that the pure devotee is completely absorbed in that mood moment to moment. An aspiring devotee mentally understands it, and then this process of sadhana bhakti is to help us to gradually transcend that mental state to the actual state on a moment to moment, and in face of various calamities or any problems that may come. The other forms of yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, etc., they are all giving us the various occupational duties of the body, mind, intelligence. But Bhakti Yoga is the only one which actually talks of the occupation of the soul. And the nature of the soul is to serve, and therefore the importance and the critical nature of devotional service. So when in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is instructing Arjuna right through, when he says that I am the ability in man, from me comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness, I am the taste in water, a pure devotee actually believes it. He not only believes it, means in the core of his heart, he understands that to be the absolute truth. Now we may say, we all would agree with this statement, but to actually believe that, if we, then we would be able to find it easy to live every moment. When we are drinking water, when we are breathing, every breath that we take, we would be able to remember Krishna. So we have to reach that level ultimately, and that is where the pure devotee is completely situated. As it said in the Bhagavatam, Savai Pumsam Taro Dharmo Yatho Bhaktir Adoksaje Ahituki Aha Pratihata Ayatma Suprasiddhati. So this is really a definition of bhakti which a pure devotee actually follows. Pumsam is for all mankind. So actually this guidance is given to all of us. So what is mankind is expected to do? Paro Dharmo. That means dharma is the occupation duty, and paradharma is the sublime or the transcendental duty. So it transcends all our other duties and becomes the supreme main duty. And what is this? Yato bhaktir adoksaje. Adoksaje is Krishna. So to offer our devotion to the Lord, and in the mood of ahituki apratihata. That means totally unconditional and uninterrupted or continuous. So this is the nature of a service, which is serene, continuous, totally uninterrupted, unaffected in the face of various so-called waves of the material nature, which may come and go. We may be at times, you know, highly ethereally blissful in because of the material circumstances, and sometimes we may be totally down in the dumps because of the anxieties that override us. So these are the waves that come and go, and it is the real battle is to implement this and bring our sincerity to the fore, such that Krishna consciousness, consciousness of Krishna as the supreme occupier of our soul becomes becomes paramount. So the nature of a pure devotee is that as per this definition of bhakti, that he transcends the any type of other desires, even if it's offered by the Lord. I remember when I came first to the movement, the first things that we heard, which was quite new, I never heard that before, about this cycle of birth and death, birth, old age, disease and death being the main four problems. Everybody hears that. So taking to chanting of the holy name, purifying our heart, we will actually break this cycle. And then for many years, I don't know when, I thought that was the goal, and then therefore ultimately there is something beyond that. And then sometime, I don't know when, but slowly there was a shock when we were told that we hear the Shikshasangam prayers, and then when His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj would start constantly saying that, no, actually a pure devotee does not even seek the liberation, or does not seek even the breaking of the cycle. So it was... For some time it was bewildering because it seemed contradictory, and then it was explained that actually the highest is not to expect anything. That means to accept any situation that the Krishna puts us in. So this is the so yes, it is definitely better to turn to Krishna for any purpose, but in the lives of pure devotees, taking us right through to the ultimate, that means where eternally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that you may kick me, embrace me, when he talks in the form of a devotee, whatever form you keep me in, I am willing to accept. And if you take the, and it does not have any bearing to the material backgrounds or any situation that the devotee is put in. If you take two contrasts of pure devotees, contrast in the sense of the material circumstances. If you take Kolavecha Sridhar, who is associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we know his story where he was a pure devotee who had nothing, who was just a banana leaf cup seller, and he had absolutely, completely poverty stricken. And yet, in whatever means he had, he used to offer to the Ganges. So when the Lord at the Mahaprakash time actually glorifies him and insists that you please ask for something from me, and he keeps refusing, and he keeps on, the Lord keeps, imagine if the Lord was to tell us that please ask, then we would, you know, we would take that he's asking, so I have to ask. But actually here, you know, he still doesn't yield to that temptation, and when the Lord is also insisting and asking that please ask for him, and the Lord actually wants to give him. So finally what does he ask? That he just asks that that birth after birth I would come, you know, see you when I'm still a banana leaf cup seller, and you come and bargain with me and harass me, so-called harass me. So, and on the other hand, you see Prahlad Maharaj, who was born the son of the emperor of the world, Hiranyakashipu controlled the world with such power. And he was also the same symptoms when the Lord, Narasingdev was very pleased with him. In fact, only he could pacify the Lord. Narasingdev's fury was such that nobody could even approach him. So at that time, when Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad is just a child, he approaches him, and the Lord is so overwhelmed. And then when he asks him, at that time also Prahlad Maharaj also says that, my Lord, I am not a merchant. I have not come to bargain with you. I mean, I have not come to, I am not serving you with any motives. No. So please, let me just be where you are, wherever you want me to be. So we can see that no matter what, the constant that we see is that it is immaterial what the external situation is, which yuga it is. The constant which goes through eternal time is that for every living entity, for every human being, that we come to the understanding that our constitutional nature is to serve and be happy in that service, and we do it in under guidance. But then the other forms of yoga and other people, the world in large, why do they find bhakti yoga at odds? But often they generally laugh at the they put down bhakti yoga as saying that it is for the less intelligent, because they see that what they are offering is something where there is a gain, and bhakti yoga actually challenges that or totally destroys it by saying that there is absolutely nothing for ourselves. So which becomes very difficult to accept, especially when the temptation that the Lord has given by high intelligence, you get a good position, and then in that phase, circumstances, when they actually see results coming out of the actions, and then here somebody says that you don't have any control, you are just a servant. So it is actually quite humiliating for them, and therefore but Krishna says that no, it is actually for the highly intelligent that who comes to Krishna consciousness, not for just on the contrary, someone who is very intelligent comes to that understanding. He says bahunam jamnanam antya gyanavan mam prapadyante, after many births of cultivation of knowledge, he comes to the understanding that Vasudevam Sarvamiti, that the Lord is supreme. So actually it is the culmination, it is not the beginning, and culmination of the start of bhakti yoga. When we come to this understanding, this causeless mercy has given us the opportunity, but then with this understanding that we have been given the opportunity, then we have to start the trudge. It's like someone takes us to base camp, but then the final walk, I mean, then we have to do it. With all this, somebody has just plucked us and put us there. That's the causeless mercy. Once we have come there, then we have to make the effort with the understanding, or we can turn and go down. So it's really up to us. So in Bhakti Yoga, in devotional service, we are not chasing a goal. This is the other difference with the other yoga systems. Why? Because actually a devotee is situated in the goal. There is no difference between the process and the goal. It is like in all other systems of religious, so-called religious systems, there is a certain process and then there is another goal. There is a difference. But here, there is no difference. Because we are situated in the goal, therefore, whatever we do is actually devotional service. And because in other systems or any other methods, because there is a gap between what you, between the process and then to attain the goal, so there is every danger that in between you may slip, you may be diverted, you know, you may go away from the path. So even if you start out that yes, I will achieve it through say Gyan Yoga, but because there is every danger that there may be many distractions, and particularly in the subtler form, the distractions of overcome with your own intelligence, overcome with your own power of that you may actually, that Krishna allows you to acquire in the process. You may have that, you may acquire siddhis, or you may acquire supernatural kind of powers which make you seem very different from the others, and you may get diverted. So the humility and the understanding of Krishna's position and our position, there is every likelihood that we can be knocked out. And we know how powerful Maya is for everyone. So even if Lord Brahma was affected, even if Lord Shiva was affected, so where is the question of any living entity, whoever, however, whatever powers they may have? It is an uneven battle actually. So if you compare in the situation in the Mahabharata, we take two examples of in relation to, we are talking of goals. If you take an extreme case of Duryodhan, where there was obviously no role for Krishna to play in his life, though he was so self-centered. The epitome of Duryodhan was his complete, total, blissfully selfish life. Means everything that he did was for his own, what was suiting him. Ruthlessly, totally committed to only one single approach. So, he was so self-centered that when he was totally battered in the battle of Mahabharata, in the Kurukshetra battle, and he was lying there dying, all his brothers were dead, all his sons were dead, and when Ashwatthama goes and meets him, that time he talks, even then, he knows he is dying, and then here he is still so absorbed in himself that he tells Ashwatthama that Ashwatthama should have a union with Duryodhan's wife, and the progeny could become the new ruler. So his mentality was how he could preserve me and mine. So how does he preserve his future? So even at that time he could not see. But in such a case of self-absorption, it is quite easy for most people in the world, even those who misunderstand Mahabharata, as most would do, even for them to disregard Duryodhan is easy, because they don't really see themselves with any connection. They can see that, oh, this is too much, this even I would not do it. Even though some people actually admire him, but at least there are lots of people who may be able to see the obvious that Duryodhan's case was extreme, because they like to see everything in black and white, the evil and the good. But then you take the case of Karna. Karna's case is very interesting, because he is very, very charitable, very noble in his own way, very honorable, high integrity, and people identify with him. But in Karna's case, if you see from Krishna's point of view, from a devotee's point of view, when Krishna goes to him, and when he goes to Hastinapur and tries to negotiate with him, talks to him about stopping the war, and he knew that if Karna could be swayed, then the war would be over, because he was one of the main instruments on that side. So he tells him also that he is the oldest son, his oldest Pandava, and actually he assures him that, you know, you will be the ruler. I assure you that you will be the ruler, and I assure you that your brothers, Yudhishthira and others, will be very happy, and they will be actually waving chamaras at your coronation. He gives him that assurance. And what is the Karna's feeling? Karna says that I cannot, you know, my friendship is most important. How can I let down my friend? He did so much for me when I was nobody. And I have to, my loyalty to him is above everything else. He says that I see all inauspiciousness. I see that anyone who is following Duryodhan is guaranteed to die. He knows all that, but he says, but no, I must follow my loyalty. So our position is very similar. That is why people can identify, because in a sentimental way, looking at honor, looking at, if you leave aside Krishna, then such a soul that who's sacrificing himself for friendship. And you know, this theme is very popular, you know, about this friendship. We see in most movies, you know, it's all Jigri Dost and in Shole and all various movies, you see the theme is really one dying for the other. In war movies also, you see how somebody is laying down his life, nationalistic cause. So laying down lives and fighting for the cause appeals to all. But the only small missing link is that whom are they doing it for? So if you don't accept Krishna, or you accept Krishna, makes all the difference. It makes the whole change. So if you don't accept Krishna, then somebody saying that Karna did wrong and then what Krishna told Arjuna to kill him, people will criticize and say that how unethical, how immoral, how incorrect it was, because they don't accept the position of Krishna. But if we see Krishna as the be all and end all, the creator of everything, including the Mahabharata, scene by scene, he is the producer, director, editor, chief organizer, choreographer, everything he was, and everything was unrivaled. But if you see from that point of view, then we can see that how misplaced loyalty is. It's total that when he was given the choice of loyalty to Krishna and loyalty to his friend, and that too, what kind of a friend? Even he knew Duryodhana's weaknesses, so he chose that. And then we also, that is a danger that we have. If we do not accept Krishna's supreme position at all times, then we could also be carried away in these so-called wrong areas. Because Karna's intention was not to please Krishna. That was the bottom line. Karna's intention was to please his friend. So that was the choice. So we have to, the bottom line for us is whom we need to please. Whenever we are confronted with situations, finally it is whom, and if you want to please Krishna, then what would please Krishna? What is, and the guidance we receive from our Guru Maharaj or senior Vaishnavas, Prabhupada and the Acharyas, is guaranteed that this is what will appeal to Krishna. So that is what the Bhagavatam actually says in every page, practically. It is telling us to attain the goal of reaching out to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to surrender to Him, and thereby develop a love to Him, our unstinted surrender to Him. Prabhupada says that it is a bit scary also, in the sense that he says that, you know, if you have any attachments, you know, if you have a single-minded goal, has to be Krishna consciousness, because if you have any attachments, you will come back. He said once that even if you attach to gulab jambus, you will come back to eat those gulab jambus in the next life. So ultimately, if we want to develop pure love for God, and we have to gradually give up. So therefore, the Krishna's ways of giving us or getting us to detach ourselves is by causing situations where by His causeless mercy, this detachment just happened, because we would not do it on our own, but because the situation is such that it is forced on us. So our nature is to resist that, though we can, our intelligence tells us that there is nothing we can do about it, it is anyway going to go. But if we can reconcile ourselves and see from the eyes of the Shastra that that so-called horrendous situation or difficult situation was created only to bring about a detachment, which you are grateful that it happened. It's like someone having a bad habit, and it's very difficult. If you're addicted to something, it's very difficult to give it up. I remember when I was, I was a chain smoker when I was young, and I had no willpower to give up and no intentions also. But then I had a very serious illness for 15 days, so I was like, you know, incoherent and had typhoid and dysentery altogether. So I was like semi-conscious for 10-15 days. So at the end of it, I found that I have not smoked for 15 days. So let me just see what happens now. And then 15 days was a break. So I could see later on that it was really a causeless mercy, because I had no intention and it was, I mean, everything was all right. But this was just this was an intervention. So at that time, the illness was kind of painful. But and if you see in everyone's lives, there will be situations where there may be some oddities, something happening, but when we look back, we will see that it was actually meant for taking us nearer to Krishna if we want to do that. If we want that as a goal, he will do that. So it is important that we understand the goal. But in that, if we are confused about the goal, so our position many times may be that we are clear, but then sometimes it becomes hazy because we have other goals. It is better to have confusion about goals rather to have wrong goals. Because to have a wrong goal, to be completely inspired by a wrong goal, it really takes us away. It is actually very, very difficult. So therefore, therefore when Queen Kunti prays, in her prayers to the Lord, when she says that, anyone who has high parentage, great opulence, great bodily beauty, and high academic, high education, are in fact, he cannot develop, that person cannot develop sincere feelings to the Lord. Why? Because these are actually, these attributes, so-called attributes, which all come from Krishna, they actually make us feel that we are something special, and that we are answerable, and we are the ones who have actually shown a difference. Just like if you are winning a beauty contest because of your bodily beauty, or because of your academics, you get very high marks, or you do very well in your career, you can actually see yourself being above others on the material platform. And because of that, it becomes a very conditioned natural state. Because of our conditioning, it becomes natural that our reaction would be that we take it that we have done it. So it is every danger. It's quite amazing that 5,000 years ago also Queen Kunti prayed that. So that means that even that time they used to have differences in academic education and differences in bodily beauty and parentage and so on. And it is eternally true for us. That is why Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj used to give this example of that having these four attributes, it's like a crown on your head. But if you're drowning in the ocean, then the crown will force you to drown even faster. So if you are on land, that means if you are in a natural position as a servant of the Lord, then the crown can also be very opulent to the person who sees, which means it is an attribute which can please the others, can inspire others also, provided you are in your position as a servant. But if you are actually in the wrong position, then in fact it can take you down. So therefore, when Prabhupada was trying to explain to spread Krishna consciousness, and then the so-called moralists and philosophers, environmentalists, there are so many people who may actually do believe in doing well for community and service, but they found it very difficult to accept. They couldn't accept Krishna consciousness the way Prabhupada put it to them because of this factor, because they did not see any room for their contribution. Everybody is saying that, where is my contribution? I mean, I am doing something. How can you say that I am not doing something? How can you say that I am nothing? That is, so they have a wrong concept, and that's why it becomes even more difficult. So therefore, we take the case of Prabhupada's disciples who joined in the beginning stages. They had no goals. Most of them, almost all of them had no goals because they were aimless. Many of them were coming from good families, but they had lost their track. I mean, they were hippies and they were rebelling against something. So they were opposing things, but they were not for something as such. It was, they knew what they didn't want, but they didn't know what they wanted. And there was a difference between the two. And that was a ripe moment when Prabhupada, once he established that faith, or once they established that he, you know, that love with him, then whatever he said, they could accept it. So it became easy. So having no goals, or having, let's say, confused goals, also is at least gives us a chance, because we are not wedded, we are not rigidly sticking to the wrong goals. Means if they are, say, blessed with intelligence and that kind of wealth and so on, the goal is to, you know, study in the West and take a job, high-paying job. And then you hear people, they said, my children are well settled. Now the word well settled refers to monetarily, immediately. That means what the implication is, that my obligations are over, he's earning well, he's settled well. Doesn't matter if he has three divorces, you know, if he's he might have, whatever his life may be, that doesn't matter. They're not concerned with it. He may have married someone out of which they did not want. They will reconcile themselves to it, but they feel that he's well settled because he's got a good job. So either that is one type, or too materialistic, or on the other side, it may be someone who has a spiritual inclination, but their own understanding that God is impersonal and ultimately will become God. So they're also, because the room, they have room for their own ego and their own self to prosper, to contribute and to add value. So therefore, these are the two dangers, that two extremes, and we have to, therefore, as a devotee, always guard against that. So once Govind Prabhu was quoting in his class from Srila Madhvacharya, who was saying that this identification, when we identify with something very strongly, we may identify with the body, with the mind, with the life air, with intelligence, but if the identification grows very strong, then that identification actually will cause a reaction, will lead to a reaction, and because of that reaction, we go into ignorance, and then the higher the identification, the higher the reaction, the higher the reaction, the more the ignorance, and the more the ignorance, the more difficult it is to come back to a constitutional nature, which is as eternal servants of Krishna. So, and Prabhupada says that devotional service is really a way to take us to, is gradually going to bring us to a constitutional nature. So it's very, you can see the depth of what Prabhupada is offering, that we are in the depth of ignorance. We are in the depth of, blissfully unaware of what our situation is. And then when we hear this statement that causeless mercy, or being plucked out of wilderness and given this opportunity, it is not just figurative, it's also literal. And we've actually been really plonked here and given this opportunity, because we've been in that, and we must have been completely attached to various other goals. Madhvacharya also talks of various consequences of the of this identification with other goals. He gives in great detail, but the conclusion is basically that all of them will lead to miseries. That the strong identification, no matter what we do other than Krishna, it will lead to misery, and that miseries will come sooner or later, but then if it comes later, we will not be able to link it to our misidentification. We will link it to something else. It becomes a blame game. So therefore, that is another trick of Maya, that when we are suffering, we don't get a chance to go to the root of the problem. Sometimes we may say that the person is suffering, why doesn't he just accept what we are saying? But because his understanding of what his source of misery is different than what we know as his source. And that is the mismatch. He's completely in a different world, and his understanding of what his ultimate solution is different from what you think is the solution. So that is the chasm that remains between them. So in such a state, even with all kind of success, it's very difficult to come, we cannot give up, either. Supposing we've got all the success, either we would be feeling that we would lose it, or somebody will compete with me and destroy me, or I want to have more. You know, you already have so much, but you're never satisfied. The thing is, oftentimes we may feel that this person has everything. He can relax, he can rest, but he just, the problem is that he would not, there is no way, because the way he has gained material success, there is no way he can sit down. Even if he's 65, 70, people may say that, well, he can just rest and relax. It's very difficult, because that is the way that the so-called happiness that a person derives is in that process. That process where he has actually suffered also, which is like the camel eating the thorns and he's drinking his own blood. But in that process, since he's looking at material assets and gains, it's very difficult for him to reverse. And he actually thinks that that is the process. So he has no way to move off of that goal. So in such a case, this misery is multiplied, and then it leads to mental diseases. And we have been hearing recently that, which is now becoming dawning on everyone, that how deep this problem is, that in the 21st century, the mental disease is the single biggest problem. It already has become, and become even more so, more and more dangerous, that the depression and and ultimately leading to even suicides for even people whom we would expect that they would have understood, but they cannot cope. So this is increasing more and more. So people come to Krishna consciousness also to get peace, because when we are suffering, so initially we may come and the contrast is so great. You walk into the temple, it is so soothing, so serene, so clean, the atmosphere is so nice, the deities are so beautiful. Even if we don't understand the philosophy, never heard it before, but still we feel that. But if we don't transcend that position, that means if we were to just come here and we're happy with getting peace and maintaining peace, that being that goal, then again we are also looking only for our position is that we just want an absence of problem, not actually not understanding what real happiness is. So our, again, we are consumed by what I want. I want absence of my misery. I want to get peace. I want to have a serene atmosphere. That is why the mood of environmentalists, for instance, that they, when they talk of global warming or they talk of the carbon effect and how this the snow caps are melting and this, but then, or how the tiger is diminishing or the koala bear is diminishing and we must do something. It is not out of compassion. It is because in their own world of preservation and what they see as serene beauty, the way everything should be controlled and mastered, perfectly planned, they feel that there must be a proper balance. They feel, not Krishna. There is no room for Krishna. And in that, they feel that there is imbalance, so we must do something. It doesn't matter that they may be eating non-veg and killing meat and eating animals. That is that they can consider, because they have no feeling. So therefore, this maintaining peace or absence of war, seeing that why two countries are fighting, unless it comes from the understanding of Krishna's link, there is no, it is of no use, no value. So therefore, ultimately the source of Krishna being, if you don't see the source as coming from Krishna, everything else would have would be of insignificance. Prabhupada would always give this example of the finger. He often quoted the finger, that the finger is part of the body, but if you were to just cut the finger, and if you do a PhD on analyzing every aspect of the finger on a separate entity, You can look at the nerves and the muscle and the veins and everything. You may study it in depth, but it has no value because you have not seen what is the use of the finger, what is it supposed to do, what is its link to the body. If you don't see the connection, it is of completely insignificant. So same way, if we were to do anything in life without seeing the source coming from Krishna, then it would be of complete insignificance. We can do devotional service, and it could also be in tamogun, in a mode of ignorance. Kapil Dev, when he explains to his mother Devahuti, says that what are the symptoms? Because someone accepts Krishna as worshipable, but then still you have anger, hatred, violence towards others, and we demand respect for ourselves. So that position is also, we may think that we, the fact that we accept Krishna, we may be chanting his rounds, we may be seeing the deities, but if we are still on the mood of anger and hatred towards others, and if we have respect for ourselves, then we would be in that category. And the example is of Daksha in the fourth canto, that he was very powerful personality. Lord Shiva was his son-in-law, and he was a devotee, and he had a huge sacrifice performed. But and the irony was that that sacrifice, the yajna, was actually to was done to please Lord Vishnu. But in that arena, because when he comes in, and then even Lord Brahma and all others, Prajapatis and others stand up, but because Lord Shiva doesn't stand up, because he was actually meditating on the Lord, so therefore he gets so virulently upset and angry that he speaks, blasphemes him, and says that he condemns him, saying that you, you're not worthy of. I gave my daughter's hand to you, but you're not worthy of it, and so on. And ultimately, he had to pay the price for it. So, because the problem for him was that he had two goals. One, the external goal was to please the Lord Vishnu when he was doing the sacrifice. But his other goal was to get respect for himself. So we have to guard against the other subtler aspects, even if we have an external goal, but what is the internal goal? So that's why we have to keep questioning ourselves. Even when later on, when in the sixth canto, when the same Daksha, as Prajapati, he is procreating and creating so many living entities, and the Lord actually praises him. The Lord Vishnu praises him and glorifies him. So, because he urges him to procreate more, and at that time he is, but because he is seeing his service only in his own relation. When Narad Muni is also performing his service, they two had different services. He had his service of procreating and producing the living entities, but not seeing Narad Muni's service of giving knowledge, which is the higher service actually, and giving knowledge to all living entities, and thereby his own sons also changed, and he was absolutely livid, and he cursed Narad Muni. Why? Because he saw his service as the supreme and only his service. Nobody should affect his service. So therefore, there was a therefore he, in that, without realizing it, he actually was putting himself in the total, in the controller's box. So therefore, this is the other danger, that we may be doing service also, but then if we don't see our service in relation to others, or we don't see others' service in relation to Krishna, then we would also be falling prey to various other deviations. And this will happen often. This is a natural thing, because we are oftentimes, in our anxiety to do well, to please say our spiritual master or other devotees, we see someone not doing properly, or we think he is obstructing me, and my service is being affected, and we may actually transcend the normal limitations. This is one major danger. Then it may lead to criticisms and anger and inappropriate actions. So that's one danger. So basically, having the right goal is important. And never mind if the intensity is also not there initially. This is one question which many people ask, that how is it that we see the intensity of the non-devotees being very strong. I mean, it's amazing how much they can do, especially the ones who have been successful. And then we see we have a lukewarm effect. But even then, it is better to have 1% intensity for the right goal rather to have 100% intensity for the wrong goal. Because that goal is only wrong. It's like, once if you have a Mercedes car, a brand new Mercedes car and a bicycle. So, Mercedes car may be going at 200 kilometers, but if it's going in the wrong direction, it will continue going faster to that direction. And you may be going at 10 kilometers speed, but if you're going the right direction, ultimately you will reach. So, basically, getting the goal right is critical. The intensity will come. Intensity will come with the association. Intensity will depend upon our sincerity. To the extent that we are sincere, we are able to refrain from the temptations, we are able to discipline ourselves and associate more with devotees. To that extent, the intensity will come. But therefore, we should not be discouraged. Many times we are in awe. We are very impressed with somebody who has done remarkably well. What is the value? Zero, not even 1%. In fact, it is you can sympathize that it is monumentally more difficult for them to get away, because they have tasted success of such a proportion, and they don't understand who was the original contributor to that, and they don't see the link, and therefore they have got so enamored by themselves. It's very difficult. So actually, when we see people suffering, it may the pure devotee's compassion is a pure devotee also suffers, but his suffering is seeing the other suffering. Just seeing that, what can I do to bring him to the right lotus feet of the Lord? But he is not suffering because of the external miseries. You know, there are several cases of very successful people, and in two in particular, one in India and one in the US, they are among the most, they are by far the most popular businessmen in their countries. By far. The most popular in the US and the most popular in India. And they are also happen to be the richest, among the richest. And why are they popular? Because externally they are so-called moral. They don't have any major vices. They seem simple. They will drive. They've seen they're driving a 10-year-old car. They're staying in the same house. One has some 10,000 crores, the other one has 100,000 crores in the US in wealth. But the people see, he's living simply. But actually, both are confirmed agnostics. They don't believe in God. And they have become the demigods for everyone else. Because people's conception of success and goals are only the material objects. But when we see that, and this simplicity is on a very, very mundane level. But when it comes to not having, if you are not able to see other people in relation to Krishna, if our lifestyle is such, to reach that success, we may trample over so many people. We are constantly disregarding Krishna's laws and actually eating our own brothers and sisters on the dining table. I mean, therefore, just by external mild behavior, it's only that somebody is more intelligent than the others in terms of how to present oneself. That's the only difference. But in the essence, there is no difference. So these are the dangers that we need to see guard against. And whatever propensities we have, like Pandavas had propensity to fight, Kauravas had propensity to fight. But because the Pandavas were linked with Krishna, it became devotional service. The Kauravas and people who supported them, they were on the other side. So it was against Krishna. So externally you cannot judge. It is really the link with Krishna and his devotees that makes all the difference. So we'll stop here. Hare Krishna. Anybody has any questions? Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.